everybody, and welcome to the show. My name is Benjamin. This is the Ben Obi Podcast Show, where I interview people who are making a difference in the world today and find out some of their secrets of how they got to where they are today. Our guest on the show today is Andrew Erickson from Talosiv. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Okay, so Drew, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself for the people who are new and don't know you, and just a bit of your backstory?
Okay, so yeah, basically, my name's Andrew Erickson, and I started a YouTube network called Talosiv, which was a word I invented when I was very young by mashing the words together, tail of a cat and explosive. I needed a unique username back then. Mm-hmm. Back in the old days of YouTube, you couldn't just pick any name. It was like a username.
I remember that.
No one else could have it. Yeah, so I had to come up with something that I knew no one else had, but I was kind of tired of the whole Andrew00314 username. So I was like, let's get something that sounds official. So I started with like action shorts and like shoot 'em up scenes, and originally a feature film, which I made back before high school, all of which were terrible. I was just into filming whatever. I wanted to make movies. Before that, I wanted to do animation, but then I experimented with it, didn't really like it. But then I did just that main channel, Talosiv, where we made comedy sketches or action sequences. I would just do that, and I realized no one was caring, no one was watching. So that's when I started branching out. I started thinking, well, no one's looking up the word Talosiv and expecting to find videos, so why don't we make something that people are looking for? So that's when I got the idea, because I was watching some tech channels, and I was watching some gaming channels and some mostly movie reviews, still to this day, mostly movie reviews. I was like, why don't I branch it out and turn it into a, you know, kind of like a spectrum of different channels. It's the different colors, where no matter what I want to talk about, no matter what I want to dive into, I'll have a place for it and an audience for it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where tech, gaming, movie reviews, even music all came to be, some of which, a lot of the content from those originally were taken down, and I kind of wish I wouldn't because they were cringily funny. But yeah, tech channel I worked on myself for several years before it actually got traction, but then obviously 2 years after creating it, it started to pick up some steam, and now it's the biggest one, so it has top priority, but this year we're also trying to get the other ones off the ground as well, just kind of raising them all up in the audience. So that's pretty much my life story summed up.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Okay. So what inspires you to make YouTube videos every day?
Well, for one, it's paying the bills now that that's a full-time job. But originally what inspired me to start making YouTube videos was I always wanted to make movies of some kind. I wanted to make serious feature films, or I wanted to go to Hollywood. Originally, I wanted to go to film school, but my older siblings and relatives and friends I knew were all going down south in Southern California, which is where Hollywood is, and they were all going to film school, and they all stopped making movies when they went to film school, and it's because they were spending all that time working on other people's visions, working on other people's projects, and they never got time to make their own, or they'd be so tired because of school and because of film classes that they never wanted to make their own movies. And I was like, well, I don't want to go there if it costs all this money, and it turns out that everyone I know isn't into filmmaking as much once they go there. I was like, I want to do this myself. So watching YouTube channels was inspiring because, especially as a kid, you could see that these random people were able to just via making good content that they liked, do it for a living. And they didn't need a producer. They didn't need a studio. All they could do was say, you know what? I want to make animated skits like this, or I want to make skits, comedy skits like this. So I'm going to do it. And if people like it, then I get to do it full time. And I loved that idea. I always wanted to be able to just run my own network, so I had complete control over what I was doing.
That's a big,
And now I do, which is nice. And I knew that I would have less resources and less money if I didn't go the film school route, or less knowledge in the first place. But I kind of consider myself like a kinetic learner, as in I learn things really well just by doing them. And I was like, well, I could either... I understand. I could either make money while producing my own content, or I could basically go into debt and produce someone else's vision.
Yeah.
So to me, the choice was obvious. It was a bit scary for a lot of the family because everyone in my family traditionally went to college, no questions asked. So to tell them all I wasn't interested in doing that was a bit scary. But now, obviously, They trust me, and they don't. No one in my family thinks I should go back to college.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I was inspired to make YouTube videos because I wanted to have things to say to the world, preach kind of my ideas on how I think things should be, in any genre, not just tech, mm-hmm. and being able to have complete control over that and not be influenced by higher ups is a big deal for me, and I noticed that not being a big issue with YouTube. Uh-huh. So yeah, that's what keeps me doing it every day is I enjoy it. And now that it's a full-time gig, it pays the bills, we're growing up, and we're getting every day closer to that end goal vision of daily content mm-hmm. on all the channels.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So I know you have multiple YouTube channels, and you've already talked a little bit about them, but would you like to mm-hmm. like elaborate on why you have a set amount of different channels, and how do you manage to run all of them?
Yeah. Some of them are definitely less active than others,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
And that people are confused by, but we kind of looked at it as, let's have a base for everything, so mm-hmm. no matter what type of video we want to make, we know exactly where it can go. So mm-hmm. if we want to talk about gaming, or movie reviews, even food, which doesn't get much, we still have that option if mm-hmm. we want to get there. Because that, you know, especially food, was more of like an experiment of, how many subs and how many followers do we get on a literal joke? Like, if we just make a parody YouTube account, mm-hmm. how many people would watch it? And we got over 1,000 subs on that, which was kind of crazy.
It's quite impressive, yeah.
The reason we wanted to have multiple is, for one, I knew that I didn't want to specify my type of content into one genre. Mm-hmm. As in, I'm good at talking about tech, obviously. People like to hear me talk about technology. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to talk about technology all day. I get bored of that topic very quickly.
So do I, yeah.
And I for sure. And personally, I consider myself a futurist, and looking at where technology is going in the next 10 years, I think mm-hmm. it's going to get a lot less significant. Every single update, every single mm-hmm. refresh, we're getting to a point where all technology is going to be so similar that it's not really going to be as interesting in the future. So I mm-hmm. think not only am I not interested in talking about just one thing forever, like I don't want to just do games or just do movies, I want to do everything, is because it gets boring. Each individual channel is boring if we just did that and nothing else. But also, I think it kind of future-proofs us, because if we can start bringing up revenue, bringing up income on things that aren't tech, and I personally see tech kind of dying out in interest over the next couple decades, I think that's a possibility that we have to consider. Having those fallback channels and those other channels that are a bit more timeless, like vlogs, really, it doesn't matter mm-hmm. when you watch those. Mm-hmm. You know, you can see what was going on in that day in history. Whereas tech, you know, my iPhone SE2 speculations, that's going to be very dated in 3 months.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, no one wants to watch that video again. So, yeah, I think it future-proofs us a little better, and it also makes work more interesting, because mm-hmm. we don't want to talk about tech all day.
Yeah.
But we want to have the option to when we want to.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, because I took a lot of inspiration with my channels from actually from Taylosif, because at the end of last year, I was actually thinking, because I had three different channels, and they had different names completely, and I decided to actually rebrand all the channels to Ben Obi, and like have Ben Obi Tech, Ben Obi Lego, and basically Ben Obi is the first three letters of my first and first three letters of my second name.
Oh, okay. So that's a cool name, though.
I love that name. So now I've got like four channels, of which I upload only on the tech one pretty much regularly, and then I do upload on the podcast one now. So yeah, I took a lot of inspiration from you. So yeah.
That's great. Really, I'm glad to see that other people enjoy that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat too. Tech is priority, and then everything else is second.
Because just like your tech channel, mine started all of a sudden just skyrocketing this year.
Yeah.
So, and prioritizing that, then I'm going to focus on the others. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah, okay. You got your mind in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made Taylosif Tech like really skyrocket? Because I've been subscribed to your channel since like 20K or something. And I've really seen an increase in your like subscribers and views and everything. What video and when about did Taylosif Tech really start to take off?
Right. So yeah, it was definitely not like an overnight thing. It was very gradual. Mm-hmm. But I can definitely point and remember the first video. I remember thinking, Whoa, people I don't know are watching this, because for the first 2 years I think Talos of Tech existed, I was not biased. I didn't do the Apple sheep thing. The first 2 years it existed, I was like, well, you gotta cater to everyone, so I'm gonna be neutral on everything, I'm gonna be fair, I'm gonna try PCs, I'm gonna try Androids, and not be biased, and no one cared. The channel was like at 30 subscribers for about a year and a half, and no one cared about me at all. I had nothing really to add to the table. I just don't think people were interested. They were like, okay, another tech channel with, again, unbiased talk about the tech specs. And that's really how I got good at everything I do, is just by doing it poorly for a long, long time. So 2 years into Talos of Tech, I started going, you know what? I don't really believe what I'm saying. Because I honestly don't think it's all tech is the same and we all just like different brands, or we all just... I think maybe, since no one's watching this anyway, let's make it interesting and just go full Apple sheep and go full on bias. And because that was honestly what I was thinking. I was like, you know what? I've liked Apple for so long and there's something different about them. I'm going to just bring that side of me out. And I think the first video that I noticed getting views that didn't normally get views, because most of the tech videos were getting 5, 10, maybe 0 views. The first time it started breaking like 100, and there were comments on it, so it wasn't some bot or something. It was just people who I never knew were watching it, because for the most part, the only people watching my videos were people I would talk to in person and be like, yeah, I make YouTube videos, and they would watch them. But the first one was the battery case for the iPhone 6S. That came out at kind of a random time. And my friend Xander also got that 6S battery case. And this is a big thing I recommend to tech channels if you want to grow your audience. Is definitely, it's a race. Trying to get that video that's on topic to present day events out there as fast as possible. And that's the first time I kind of started doing that, was I was like, look, everyone online is talking about the iPhone 6S battery case and how it's ugly, how it's stupid, how they hate the battery life of the 6S. And I was like, you know what? No, this is fine. It was intelligently designed. It works with the software better than a typical battery case. We're going to give credit where credit is due to it. So let's talk about the 6S battery case. So I uploaded a video defending it. Got a lot of hate, but at the same time, a lot of people who had normally never seen the word Talosiv were suddenly seeing that word and seeing my video. And yeah, I would say that was, again, it didn't shoot up like crazy. I think that video got 200 views, and that was shocking to me. I was like, oh my God, I went viral. So it was a very gradual process. Afterwards, it was like, okay, now let's start talking about the headphone jack. I think that was the next big one. Or let's talk about the new 12.9-inch iPad Pro I got right when it came out. All out of my personal money. You know, we weren't making money, any money at all on YouTube back then. So yeah, I was just trying to stay on top of what everyone else is talking about. And what I have found has been the most successful in my life, and people who watch me today probably can still notice this, is that the more controversy I stir up, or the more topics that not a lot of people agree on I like to poke at, the better the channel does. That's kind of how it started. So when people are like, Drew, you would really get more views or more viewers if you went more unbiased and you treated everything fairly and you didn't show such favoritism towards Apple, I'm like, I've done that. It didn't go anywhere. The only way I know to grow the channel is to talk about things that people don't agree on. And it's not, I don't want people to think I'm intentionally trying to tick them off. Everything I say in my videos is my honest opinion. It's not me pretending to cause a disagreement when there isn't one. Like, I hate on Apple when it's due. I think they do plenty of things wrong at the same time.
I agree.
But yeah, everything I say in the tech videos is what I believe. I don't want people to think it's fake just so I can get the views up, because I do like finding those topics people don't all agree on. That's far more interesting to me, is finding topics that not everyone can agree on. When like Apple was removing the headphone jack, basically every YouTuber was like, oh, this is terrible. And now we're all so used to it. And back then I was like, no, this is great. In fact, I wish they would have done it sooner. That's my honest opinion, and I know it's a controversial one, and that helps the channel grow. So expect more of that, because I'm just going to keep on doing that.
Yeah, I think one of the first videos I actually watched from you was about the headphone jack. And I was at the beginning when when Apple did remove the headphone jack, I was like, why do they have to do it? Then I saw your video and I was like, yeah, it makes sense because it's just like a wasted port that could be used, and that space could be used for more. And we're moving into into a wireless future now, and it just makes sense.
Right. And it was crazy because there were leaks of that happening like 6 months before the 7 was announced.
Yeah, I actually remember making
videos. And people were still surprised.
Yeah.
People were like, Apple removing a port? And I was like, have you seen Apple throughout history, period? Like, this is so normal to them. Removing old ports has been like, they've always done that since their origins, since like the Macintosh, you know. That's like such a common thing. And people were still shocked by it. So, yeah, that was kind of the next video that kind of blew up, was I uploaded a video of the, with the thumbnail of the bottom of an iPhone 6 with an arrow pointing at the headphone jack saying, that doesn't need to be there, or this is pointless. And that, yeah, that stirred up a lot of people for sure. I got, I gained a lot of fans, including yourself, just from that controversy.
Cool, as you said also before, timing is everything. So when there's like a new tech news headline or something, report, if you're like a tech journalist, reporting on that as soon as possible is the best thing. Also when like new products come out, reviewing them as soon as possible.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And also have something unique to you that when people, because obviously when an iPhone just comes out, there's a significant more amount of people on YouTube searching about an iPhone. So you also have to make sure not only that you get it up really quickly, but you also can, I don't know, throw a little humor twist on there or show something unique to your channel so that when those new viewers tune in to a channel they've never seen before, they see you and they go, oh, I've never watched this before. This is kind of cool. I think I'll stick around. And that's how the audience grows and grows. Because sometimes I think people upload too quickly and they don't take any time to make it special. And it's so rushed that you get all those views on that video, but no one really wants to stick around because they were like, well, he seemed nervous or he seemed rushed or he didn't talk much about other things I was concerned about. So, yeah, it's definitely finding that efficiency line, which is kind of how my career has been built, has been let's not work too long on something, but let's make it good enough so that people aren't thinking we're lazy. So like there's a perfect line you gotta meet, and it's like we can't spend more than this amount of time on this video, but it also has to look pretty good. And we've had a lot of disagreements with people on how we run our channel, and but it's working so far, so we'll keep doing it.
Okay, so the next question here is, do you think Apple will one day create their own cryptocurrency? We've already got Apple Pay Cash, which is kind of a form of cryptocurrency, I guess. But do you think Apple will like officially come out with their own cryptocurrency, maybe offer a reward system or something, where when you buy an Apple product, you get like one Apple coin or whatever. So do you think Apple will one day create their own cryptocurrency?
Well, that would be very interesting, but personally, I'm not a strong believer in crypto, and that's because I've invested in it. I've invested my own money, and I've done a lot of mining, and it took me a long time to kind of understand how cryptocurrency works, and it's very confusing. But after researching it, understanding now how it works, and I feel like I can confidently say I know how the system works. I don't think that's really where the future of currency is going. I think that there's a couple of big issues crypto, I think especially Bitcoin, the reason it's so popular is because it's tied to another currency. As in, people buy into it like it's a stock, not really like they want to spend their own personal Bitcoin on certain products. I think they buy into Bitcoin because they're like, because that could become US dollars. Or that can become pounds. You know, like that's the reason people are buying into it, is because they can get the other currency at a higher rate. But at the same time, I haven't experienced that yet. So far, all the crypto I've invested has gotten devalued more and more and more. And it took me 2 months, I think, for that transaction to take place. Like I gave the money to the Bitcoin, to Bitcoin, and I said, okay, I'll take that much back. I didn't get that Bitcoin for like 2 months. And I was okay, this is particularly slow. And the reason it's so slow is because it's not backed by a bank or a server, which means that all the miners are the ones transferring all that data. And if we have this many people mining and that's how long it takes, I don't think it's going to be as efficient or as intuitive as just a regular banking currency. But so that's why I think that crypto, while cool and interesting, and I think people should be a bit more informed about it because a lot of people don't really get how it works, I don't think that's where everything's leading to. And if Apple had their own, that would be kind of interesting. I just like the idea of a rewards program with points. But no, I personally don't think it'll be crypto. I could be wrong, though. We'll see.
Yeah.
What do you think, personally?
I think it would be actually pretty cool to have Apple create their own cryptocurrency because you could buy Apple products with Apple Coin and stuff. I'm not really like, I don't really know that much about crypto, but I just know it would be pretty cool that Apple created their own currency for their products and stuff. And I'm sure Apple sheep will just buy it.
Well, if they could find a way to make it more intuitive, because right now I think Bitcoin and crypto is like the opposite of what Apple would stand for when it comes to purchasing things.
True, yeah.
Is it like how many times you have to bounce the decimal over to know how much money you have, or how long it takes for transactions to process. So, yeah, I have some doubts about it. But if Apple could fix a lot of those things, maybe. Maybe it could happen. But if there was a company that could fix those things, it would make sense that it would be Apple.
Yeah.
They would focus on attacking those problems.
We've heard about the Apple Car a little bit. Do you think Apple will go ahead with it and maybe one day release it? And how do you think it will compete with other companies like Tesla, even Porsche now, and Mercedes and companies like that?
Yeah, they're definitely working on something. There's plenty of patents and research that there's evidence that they're working on something to do with cars. Now, we're still very confused as to that's just software or maybe it's an actual hardware car. Yeah. And we're still not really sure, and I just think Apple isn't sure either. I think they're just experimenting with it because, you know, they're the richest company in the world. They have plenty of money to investigate these types of things. And I think they're like, okay, maybe cars are the next kind of revolution in tech, and we should probably have some knowledge about it if that's what we believe the next big thing is. I personally think that is too. I think smartphones are going to kind of all get too similar, but the next generation of tech refreshes and tech changes, I think, is going to be cars and how different car companies adopt to different autonomous modes and electricity and efficiency and how fast they are. I think that's kind of where the next few decades we're going to see the most amount of change in the tech world is automobiles. Yeah, I think the big issue I keep running into with Apple versus Tesla is while they're very similar companies, and I love both of them, Tesla just has so many charge stations already in place. And I really don't think Tesla would allow their charge stations to charge Apple cars.
Or maybe Apple will create their own chargers and charge people.
they'd probably have to. In order to release their own car, they would have to buy up all that real estate and build their own charge stations that not only outnumber the amount of Teslas, but probably have to outperform with faster charging with their car and stuff. So I'm not saying they can't do it because at the same time, I'm like, well, Tesla doesn't have more money than Apple and they were able to do it. You know, Tesla's like losing money all the time and Elon Musk just pours his money into it hoping that they'll turn a profit later, and that's a very admirable way to run a business. And I'm doing the same thing with my other YouTube channels, is just being like, hopefully we'll make money on these later, but for now we're just gonna burn it. But Apple, I mean, nearly $1 trillion worth company, they of all people could afford to put up those charge stations everywhere too, right? If Tesla can, why couldn't Apple? So I'd be really interested to see if they want to make their own car themselves. But yeah, they're going to be years and years behind everyone else because Tesla is already releasing, you know, their budget model and the semi truck, and they say they're working on a Model Y, and after the Model Y, they work on a pickup truck. So there's plenty of lineup for Tesla already, and Apple hasn't even entered the game yet because they're not, you know, they've never made a car before. Makes sense as to why they're not. But yeah, I really hope so. I really hope they do, but man, if they do, that's a really challenging market to enter at this point. I guess it's not too late. I mean, Apple can speed things up and outperform the competition very quickly, but yeah, I really hope they do, but I think they have a lot of issues going into that market. A lot of money has to be spent.
Yeah.
On all those stations. Oh.
Yeah. That's gonna be tough. And it may end up being like a HomePod situation. So yeah.
Right.
That which brings us into our next question. We've seen the HomePod sales like decline right now. Shelves are filled with HomePods and stuff, and it's not really selling that well.
Right.
How do you think Apple could save it? Like bring it back and make it the best smart speaker on the market, or near the best smart speaker on the market?
Yeah. Well, I think the first reason the HomePod isn't selling well isn't necessarily that there's something wrong with it. I just think it's a very narrow audience. Because I know a ton of people who love Apple products and will buy anything Apple, who literally said that, like, well, I can't buy a HomePod because of my living situation.
Yeah.
Like I'm living with my parents, or I just don't have a need for a speaker that gets that crazy loud. I use HomeKit, I use Siri. It's all on my phone anyway. So why buy the HomePod? So I think the fact that they don't have all that support from their regular returning audiences is probably a big factor in those sales. Similarly, like the Google Home Max isn't selling great either, because like not a lot of people can justify that loud a speaker. So if we are talking about how to fix it or how to raise sales, obviously we know that via software update, they could add Bluetooth, they could add support for other streaming services, and that would likely get some more people to buy it. But personally, I still think that wouldn't cause much of a dent in the sales, because it would still be too loud or too overpriced for most people. Most people are like, it's cool, it sounds nice, but I am just not often in a situation where I need a really loud small compact speaker that's omnidirectional. So knowing that, I think that pretty much the only way to change HomePod sales is to make a cheaper one.
Make a
smaller one. But that'll be interesting for Apple, because Apple's always kind of like, no, you go big or you go home, and we want this to sound premium, and we want this to sound perfect. So if they make a smaller one, do they have to compromise on something, right? Maybe just the volume, maybe it just doesn't get as loud, or maybe bass isn't as strong, but it's cheaper. So yeah, I think maybe at WWDC this year, we might get an unveiling of HomePod Mini or HomePod Air, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just a smaller, cheaper version. Or they might just stick to their guns and say that, well, HomePod doesn't really need to be a thriving market, so we'll just leave it the way it is. And if people want it, they'll take it. But we're not going to do much about it. So yeah, I think it's from the start a very narrow audience of people that would want that kind of product. But yeah, I think if they started competing more with the regular sized, you know, Amazon Echo and Google Home, maybe numbers would be a lot higher. Probably would be a lot higher, because price is likely the biggest thing keeping people away from that. So
yeah. Yeah, that's one of the main reasons why I'm not thinking of buying a HomePod right now, because of the price. So if they do release a HomePod Mini, I probably would buy it. Also, I don't really need a big speaker, because I've got this small room here, and I've also got my bedroom, and I don't really need that much sound. Also, most of the time when I'm listening to music and stuff, I'm at my desk on my computer with my headphones on. So
You're a perfect example of why a lot of people have no need for.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have an Amazon Echo. I have a Google Home Mini.
There you go.
I love them. I love controlling the smart lights and stuff, but I never listen to music. Mainly because it's got Spotify or Google Play Music. If it had Apple Music support, then I'd probably listen to them more. But
sure. Well, we still have the Home Max and the Home Minis, and they're white noise machines or light switches. You know.
Yeah.
We're just like, Google, turn off the lights. Google, turn on the lights. That's about all they're used for. I'm never like talking to my Google Home Mini and saying like, play this song, because it just sounds weird. It's not a good sound quality, but. Yeah, they're cheap, so
yeah. So they work for you still have the Home Max.
Can't get rid of it. Yeah,
nobody wants to buy it.
I've tried selling it. I've lowered the price down to like $250, and still not a single person has messaged me about it. So yeah, I guess it's my incredibly crazy loud nightstand back at my apartment. It's not at the office, but it's definitely overkill, and it sometimes will still kill the Wi-Fi networks. The headphone jack is still broken on it, so it's very loud, which is nice, but yeah. the amount of times people are able to take advantage of that is so slim. So, I mean, I got the unboxing and I got the review out of it, and we got to compare it to the HomePod, yeah. so we got our use out of it. It's mm-hmm. just, I can tell that there's such a little demand for it, because if lots of people were buying it, I think a lot more people would be excited to find one that's like half off on yeah. Facebook yard sale. So I don't know why. Well, I know why. It's even more expensive than the HomePod. It's just such a narrow audience. But yeah, I guess we're keeping it because we can't get rid of it.
Okay.
Shipping it would be crazy too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That thing's heavy, yeah. so it would, can it would take, even if we wanted to send it to a fan or something, that would take a lot of money and a long time to ship.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, what do you think if Tim Cook were to be removed as CEO of Apple? Who would take his place, and how would that person change Apple, and would they change it for the better or for the worse?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Definitely hypothetical. If I were to guess, I would probably say Craig Federighi, because he mm-hmm. seems to be in charge of a lot of things in the first place. Like, there was this one keynote, I think it was a couple of years ago, that he almost did entirely by himself. Oh, yeah. Which kind of was reminding me of the Steve Jobs era, when Steve used to do basically everything. But Tim Cook came out at the beginning and just did a little opening segment. And then Craig came out and basically did the entire keynote. And it was like a two-hour keynote. I can't remember if that was a iPhone unveiling or a Worldwide Developers Conference. It was one of those. But after that, I was like, you know, Craig seems to be like a likable member of the staff. A lot of people think he's funny, and he incorporates the jokes. And I think what would change if Craig was in charge was we'd probably get more frequent updates to the Mac market, because he's very much in charge of Mac OS and uh-huh. that side of Apple. So maybe if he was in charge, he would likely have a bit more priority on updating the Mac Pro and the Mac Mini and things like that, and making sure they're all up to date. Or maybe Apple would be a bit more funny, because he always likes to add a little comedic spin.
Yeah, because Tim Cook's a bit serious sometimes. Like...
yes, and that's cool in certain aspects, that he treats Apple like Steve did, you know, with being, this is these products change lives, and it all brings us together. But it's also kind of funny when someone comes up there and they're making jokes and making fun of certain things. And I think that might be a good follow-up to Tim Cook. But Tim's doing a great job. I really like where Apple's going post-Steve Jobs, which I think is impressive, because we've seen Apple work without Steve Jobs, and it didn't do well back in the 90s. Yeah, but I think they've got Steve's vision down, and they've got his ideals down, and I'm perfectly happy with where they're going. I think they're doing great.
So what do you think will be Apple's next big product release? Like, we've had the HomePod, which wasn't really that big of a product release. What do you think Apple would release next?
Yeah, for me, I'm still betting on the next thing being AR glasses, because that seems like the progressional next step of wearables.
Yeah.
And a product they just haven't stepped into. Sometimes I think car, but I still am so unsure about that. Whereas the AR glasses thing, I think are inevitable.
Yeah.
That it's like, no, they're definitely working on that, and it'll be ready within a year or two. Mm-hmm. Tim Cook's even talked about that in interviews, saying that, you know, with AR kit blossoming and them encouraging more augmented reality stuff, they're just waiting on the hardware to be ready. The reason we don't have AR glasses from Apple now is because they can't find a way to make it interesting enough and small enough to compact into a reasonable pair of glasses. So I think they're just waiting on that tech to get small enough, or they're researching how to get that tech small enough. And that'll likely be the next product refresh. Other than that, I can't really think of what else they could make, other than things people have been asking for a long time, like a dedicated TV or smart home appliances or a DSLR. Like, I would really want them to make a DSLR personally.
Yeah, that'd actually be cool. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no evidence of that, so I don't get my hopes up. But the AR glasses thing, if I had to guess what the next product refresh will be, that's what I would put money on.
Yeah.
It seems like an inevitable product release, so I'd say that's the next thing.
Yeah, that's what I think so as well. I honestly can't even think about anything else they could actually release to make people's lives better, apart from those. But I mean, they're kind of running out here. Probably people will walk into each other if they go around with AR glasses, which isn't really making people's lives better, but anyway.
Yeah, they're gonna have to be careful about how much they put over.
Yeah, exactly. Vision.
I'm sure they'll I'm sure they'll think about that, but yeah, it could get bad quick.
Yeah, the headlines: two people walking down the street just knocking into each other. Someone gets run over.
I can already imagine that. Yep. It's we're like gonna be reading about chaos. It.
Okay, so this is a Google question. Because I know I know you're an Apple fan. I'm an Apple fan as well. Mm-hmm. But do you think Google will ever like fix up the Pixel lineup and make it better, or will they just like drop it, just like any other Google product ever?
Yeah, here's hoping. I mean, I hope they kind of take time to perfect this lineup and not discontinue it and move on to the next one. But sadly, I don't really see much evidence of it. Usually, especially with the Pixel line, we usually get heads up about things far, far in advance. Like, I remember reading that the Pixel 2 wouldn't have a headphone jack about 6 months before it came out.
Yeah.
And that ended up being true. And now the next one is a notch. It's just like, yeah, it'll have a notch. We know. But I think what they need to do is just kind of widen that ecosystem, if that's what they're going for. Because right now, it's barely anything. I mean, they've already stopped selling the original Pixel, so they don't sell anything that's a year old. So they have the Pixel 2, they have the Pixel Book, which is this $1,000 Chromebook.
It's just horrible. It's like
that. No one wants that.
Who even came up?
I'd be so curious to see what the numbers on that are. Like, who is like, I need to do Chrome document work and spreadsheet work. Allow me to spend $1,000. Like, so that's barely a competitor to anything. Like, look at anything any competitor has, it's probably better.
Yeah.
And then they have their Home Minis, which aren't technically even Pixel branded, but I mean, those are the three things that I think are selling, or that they have to offer. I mean, there's Pixel Buds, but even Android followers hate the Pixel Buds.
Pixel Buds aren't that good. They don't look good.
AirPods
are way better, I think.
The worst of both. They're the worst of both. You get the cons of a wire attaching to earbuds, and the cons of wireless ear and trying to tangle them up into the charge case just right. So pretty much all Pixel defenders have in their say is, we have a pretty good camera.
Yeah.
But now so many other Android phones are topping them, both with specs and features, and Apple's still way ahead in terms of processing power and exclusives. So, yeah, I really want Google to do well. It's not that I just hate them and I hope they fail. It's just I need them to show me.
Yeah.
I need them to, you know, make your own smartwatch or make your own laptop that is actually decently priced and equally competitive. And we can look at it and go, oh, that's a good deal. That's really compelling.
Yeah.
But from what I'm reading and hearing about Google working on, it sounds like they're going to work on something called Fuchsia, is a whole nother platform separate from Android that's more of an iOS competitor, because it will be locked down to exclusive Google hardware. And it feels like they're just going to start focusing on that, and they'll likely discontinue the Pixel line when they start that again. So yeah, that's why when people ask about why they shouldn't buy the Pixel, for me, it's always about support. As in, Google, while they're telling you to buy it now, they're going to want you to buy something else in just 2 years.
Yeah.
And Apple is still supporting the iPhone 5S. You know, they
that's
long,
crazy.
Long-term support. So, yeah, I think there is a way to fix the Pixel line. I don't see any evidence of them doing it, to
be honest. Yeah, I honestly think they're just going to drop it, just like they did with the tablets. They're
probably.
Like, nope, no more.
In the Nexus line. Selling well. That was a cool lineup, in my opinion. The Nexus 5 and the 6P, they were budget but fairly decently made phones, and I knew a lot of people with those. But now they're expensive, more expensive than the competition, and have less things. And it's like, no, I can't say that's a good phone. I just can't. That's not justifying the price. Yeah.
Yeah, and then people are like, oh no, but it's got a good camera. You could just buy an iPhone, and you have pretty much the same features as with a camera. Probably the quality is not going to be as good, but if you like want to take video, then the iPhone's way better than the Pixel. And even Pixel fans will tell you that. Well, some
Pixel fans. It even kills me when they say that the only reason to have a telephoto lens is portrait mode. It's like that was definitely not the only reason.
Yeah.
And just watch an Apple keynote. It was all about how people taking pictures or taking video are always doing this on their phones, but they're losing all their data. So we add a second lens so that you don't lose as much and it looks better. And it works. I use that feature all the time.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
And they just act like, well, it's only for portrait mode and we have that, so whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, And you can now install that algorithm that the Pixel 2 uses. You can root your Android phone and add that to any Android now.
Yeah.
So it's not even an exclusive to Pixel thing. So if people have to get Android, with no question, they need to get an Android phone, I'd still say don't get a Pixel. It's like, that's, you get, go Essential, go OnePlus. You can still get near stock Android experiences on much cheaper phones that have way more features. So yeah, it's ridiculous. It sucks.
Okay, so our next question here is from Twitter. It's from a fan, a Trusted Texan.
Oh, cool.
He says, he asks, what is your favorite item from your collection?
Collection of...
So I think it means like collection of
Apple
tech.
Product?
I think collection of tech.
Okay. Ooh. Man, I usually resort to iPhone just because I use those the most.
Yeah,
so
that,
I typically say the 10. But I guess I'm very proud and happy to own an iMac Pro. That kind of feels like a significant milestone for me, because that used to be something that buying a Mac Pro or just buying a high-end iMac was always just some goal, like one day we'll be able to afford that and we'll get it. And so yeah, but being able to save all my money, because I, as soon as the iMac Pro was unveiled, I started putting money aside every single month and being like, okay, that money's saving, that money's for iMac, that money's coming. And I was able to afford that at the end of the year. So I don't know, that's just kind of like a good accomplishment. It's a tool we use every day. It's a beast. It's fast at exporting. So I'm very happy to own that. So I could say either iPhone 10 or the iMac Pro is just cool to have. But also, credit where credit is due. I'm very grateful a fan actually sent me an original iPhone that still works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's really cool to have. Like, I'm never getting rid of that. Like, I'm just, because the more time that goes by, the more valuable that is. So, it's really cool to be able to hold that and being like, this is where it all started, and it still works to this day. So, yeah, those are some honorable mentions.
Yeah,
for sure.
I have an original iPhone, but mine doesn't work. I'm going to try to fix it, but at least I have like the physical thing, and I can be like...
Yeah, you can feel it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what it's like.
It was
that
small.
Old size. Very small.
Now we've got like these massive phones and the iPhone 10 Plus this year. And
right.
Yeah. Okay, so...
A 6.5-inch display.
Yeah.
All the way down to
that.
That's
going to be massive.
Yeah,
that is
cool.
Going to be massive. Okay, so what are your future plans for YouTube at the moment?
Okay, so still our goal this year hasn't changed, which is just to hire a second full-time employee so that we can produce... Both of us can produce content at a faster rate, and we're already doing a little bit of that here and there on weekends and in small doses. So... Kind of my end goal on YouTube, though, is to get to a point where we're kind of just this fluent, constant network of channels that is uploading stuff regularly on all of them, and all of the channels are making money, and we can get to a point where we can start experimenting back to making short films and even feature films one day, because that's still my dream, is to make movies on a massive scale with high budgets, and to kind of have that network fund all that so that we can afford to be our own producers and publishers. And I think one day it'd be really cool to like get to a point where we have like so much content that we can start to provide like exclusives to certain fans who are willing to support us a little more directly. So kind of like a Talos of Prime membership that's, I don't know, $1 or $3 a month or something. Just something small. And then we can have like a subscription service where people will get to see stuff early, or they'll get to see exclusive stuff that they wouldn't see on YouTube. And we could have like an app and a website and stuff like that. Probably not this year or next year, but sometime in the future. You know, I think Social Blade's predicting tech will hit 1 million in like 2021. Which could be really cool if we're on track to hit that. So yeah, just growing everything at the same time, and growing incomes and growing subscribers while still being in complete control of our content and trying to keep it, you know, sponsor free if possible. If we need sponsors, then we'll resort to them. But if we can't get by without them, we're going to try to, because we know a lot of people just aren't, they don't like that. So we're trying to keep that ad-free if possible. We're well aware we could make a lot more money if we did sponsors, but we're doing fine as it is, so we're figuring that let's not ask for more money given we're doing just fine. So yeah, that's kind of the goal, is to just blossom the network into it's much, much bigger, and we've got more people on staff. And of course, later on in life, I'm sure we could see ourselves hiring more editors, more employees that do more full-time stuff. So yeah, just grow everything. That's the plan.
Cool. So, sounds like actually a good plan. Okay. So do you have any advice for smaller creators or creators that want to start doing YouTube?
Yeah, I would advise that you don't wait for stars to align, because I think that prevents a lot of people from wanting to make videos, is they're like, well, I don't have the right camera I want yet. I'll save some money and get some camera, or I need to edit it in this program, or I don't have a computer that can handle it. It's like, don't worry about that. The process of getting good at something is just being creative with what you have. It's not about, you know, waiting till you have the money to do something. It's waiting till you have the diligence. So like, we ran for a while Talos of Talks, like the entire channel we ran on an iPhone. It was filmed on an iPhone, it was edited on an iPhone, the vlogs were edited in iMovie. That's pretty much all you need. So essentially all you really need to run a YouTube channel is an iPod Touch. You know, you could do all of it on there. It won't be great, but I think that experience, you shouldn't go into it just expecting to make a ton of money and expecting a ton of people to watch it right away. Yeah. Like, look at me as an example, as in, like, I did YouTube for like 6 to 7 years before anyone watched anything. It was just years and years of diligence and me going, you know, like, well, let's try this. Maybe more people want to watch this. Showing it to people I knew and them going, it's okay. And just experience and not being afraid to try new things. Like, if you look at my original vision, it was, I want to make feature films. I want to be a director. I want to be, you know, or an actor, or I just want to be in charge of making movies and telling stories. Cut to me unboxing a Galaxy S9. You know, I experimented with different things, but that end goal hasn't changed. It's just, I'm willing to experiment and try different things in order to make that vision possible. And I tried to find the vision that said, okay, what path can I take that will allow me to get to where I want to go in the most efficient or most fun way? And I was like, well, I like tech. I like talking about tech, or I like talking about movies. If doing that and documenting it and uploading it allows me to fund myself more so I can get to that point where we can make feature films, then that's wonderful. That's great. Then let's keep doing it. So yeah, I would say advice to people, stop waiting. In other words, just don't wait for the perfect equipment or the perfect money. Just look at what you have and start trying to make something with that. You know, the experience of hearing yourself on camera, looking at yourself on camera, that's a big challenge a lot of people have to overcome. And the sooner you can conquer that, the better. Or figuring out, just looking at a YouTuber you do like and the videos you're making and just trying to notice the differences. Just be like, okay, see, this one YouTuber, they do this thing I like. I guess I'm not doing that. Maybe I could try to implement that, like this type of shot, this type of panning, this type of quality. Sometimes watching yourself, you'll be like, I'm very monotone and I'm very quiet and I'm very boring. Yeah. So how do I make myself more of an interesting person to talk to? Because if you watch, it's probably an interesting process just watching earlier Talosa videos. You can see how I used to act on camera compared to how I act now. It's changed drastically. Because I was watching myself and monitoring myself while editing and going, you know, I sound really bored right now, or I sound very boring to people. So how can I change the way I talk or change the way I give off my personality in a way that's more interesting, in a way that's more engaging? And all that's just possible by basically shock therapy, just basically making videos, even if they're not good. Just use iMovie on your phone or your iPod or whatever. Just do it now so that you can figure out what you're good at, what you're not good at, what you enjoy doing, what you don't enjoy doing. Like, I found out I'm not a fan of editing. I can do editing, but I don't like it. So I'd rather have someone else who enjoys editing be in charge of that while I handle more of the creative side of it. All of that's just possible by experimenting with stuff. So don't wait. Just go ahead, go for it, start making stuff, start experimenting, see what you can and can't do. And then after that, of course, you can make criticism polite. You know, being hard on yourself doesn't have to be, you know, hateful. You can be like, we could have done that better, we could have done that better. But still acknowledge what you made and be like, yeah, but I made something. You know, I did something, I created something. Be proud of yourself for that, but also always be like, I could be doing better, though. So that's still the effect I've been applying on my life and my content, and it's working so far, so I encourage it for other people. Maybe it doesn't work, I don't know, but it worked for me.
So is there anything else you want to share before we wrap up here?
I like you guys reaching out, and I also wanted to mention that I'm not collaborating with you and giving you iPhone 10 cases and telling people it's a giveaway. I selected someone at random on the Patreon, which thank you for supporting us, by the way. And I selected someone at random. I was just scrolling through comments and I said, okay, this person. And it was you. And then I saw, I looked you up and it was Ben Obi. And then I saw the productions thing. And then I saw that you had been emailing me. And I was like, oh, well, I selected him at random, but he's also interested in me being on his podcast. So I don't want people thinking it was the other way around.
Yeah.
As in, I already knew who you were, so I decided you won the giveaway. You won the giveaway and then found out you made stuff. So that's why I wanted to come on and talk to you. But by the way, great questions, and thanks for having me on. I like doing this type of thing, and we're trying to do it more often now because lots of people ask us to. So. Uh-huh. But yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, last thing, where can people find you on social media?
Basically, all you got to do is search Tailosive, which is T-A-I-L-O-S-I-V-E, and you'll find a bunch of different accounts, the biggest one being Tech at Tailosive Tech, which is on Instagram, that's on Twitter, go on YouTube. You can literally just Google Tailosive and you'll get nothing but me. So that's the beautiful thing about that word is it's unique to me. You're only going to get me. So just search that on any social media site. You're going to find a couple accounts. Most of them are going to be mine.
Okay, cool. So anybody who wants to follow Drew on social media will also link all of his social medias in the description below, or a few of them because he's got a lot of them. But again, thanks so much, Drew, for being on the show, and have a great day.
Take care.